snacks and water, and that's not the only thing you needed to do. So, Leon, I'm really excited that you might have two documents from me. So we have, you can sit over here too, either way.
Oh, I thought maybe you had like four people sitting.
Well, so we have, one board member hasn't been appointed yet. So that takes us down to eight. Then we have one who's sick, that's down to seven. One who's in the hospital with their husband, they're down to six. One who had to teach tonight, down to five. Who's left? One's out of town doing a poetry conference. So now we're back five. Before we're down to four people. But there's a bunch of people online and we're here. And
you're here. Yeah, for sure. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't sitting in anybody's seat.
No, and I did put a microphone up there in case you prefer to present from over there, but we have a camera pointed at you. There's one pointed at the committee. I'm supposed to be quiet and be the tech person.
Also, like advanced slides and stuff.
Yeah, okay. But I can never be quiet. So maybe when everybody else gets here, I can be quiet. We have there's a voicemail. Do you see a voicemail on your email too? Or is it just me?
Recent.
Right. Yeah, it just came through. Because sometimes everybody gets them, and then you know Kim will get. She sees it, she'll do it first. That's not good for me. Okay, we have two board members coming so far, maybe four. And the packet is beautiful. The presentations are full color. I have the extras are black and white, but the one the board members got.
Are there extras up back here?
Yeah, those are the black and white ones, though. Not as fun.
That's okay, I'll take it.
How's it going with the contract? Is it looking good?
So I haven't heard anything back yet from their end.
So you still have another few days anyway that you expect it to.
Yeah, to like take place or hit or whatever. And we've got stuff on top of stuff, yeah. As usual. So it's like fire alarm installation and agreement, like internet agreement. And doing, like we've had inspections and all types of stuff. We've had so many people in and out. It's been crazy. And then I'm like your board members. I'm like, I heard somebody's teaching tonight. I'm like, I just taught last night. Then I have my other class tomorrow night. It's nuts.
Yeah.
It's
nuts. I think it's also like, it really is still cold and flu season.
Yeah.
Like, so on top of everything else that fills up people's lives, we have like rapidly changing temperatures and people get migraines and they're knocked out. And then flu's still out there. Do you get migraines? It seems like everyone that I make dinner plans with gets migraines that day. So maybe it's me. Hi, Molly.
Recording in progress.
Did
fully accessible.
Yay!
It has taken a few days, and the problem is the way that we have been doing it turns out to be not strictly compliant. You know, it looked compliant, but there were little pieces we didn't understand, so I'm redoing so much stuff now. Anyway, so I've got two of them done.
Mention the review process in my comments, but there's not.
What's that?
I had made a note of myself a long time ago to like say, oh, here's the reviewer list.
Oh.
And this, but
oh, yeah.
No, we don't have that, and there's not, it's not really on topic. So, I do.
Hi, everybody on the Zoom. We have a lot of people on the Zoom, which is great. We are still waiting for one or two other people to arrive, so it'll be just a couple minutes.
I think we noticed it about a week ago. He said he knew about it. He was trying to get it.
Okay.
I didn't want everyone to hear this voice when I was scared of what session to do that. Winifred. Did you see all those emails from us today? There's some.
Yeah, some of them, yeah.
So we had a
Didi. For the availability.
Oh, yeah.
We had a Didi board meeting this morning with really
wait.
Good.
Oh, wait. Did you send an email about that?
No.
Oh, okay.
We had a Didi board meeting with very little action. And because of that, there was lots of discussion and lots. Early in the morning, the people have had coffee and so there are lots of ideas. And those ideas start to spill over into your territory. Okay.
I was worried I missed something because sometimes your emails are delayed to me.
No, we were trying to follow up on what the Didi board asked us to do, and at some point.
Is Dr. Sharma on the Didi board?
He is.
Oh, okay. I've never met him. Is he a pediatrician?
No, he's a neurologist.
Oh.
But he was something else, but you ended up getting scooped into it because the conversation grew and grew.
Usually, if families need resources, we return to our social worker, and then they know that stuff.
And that's what we heard from the ARC, was that she's done many trainings.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. All right, so.
It's funny, you only know Nita's husband as a social worker on Carl.
I know. So this is like, I just kind of bring it up to sort of apologize to you, like there was just, it was like this burst of inspiration and you got swept up in it, but I guess, I'm sorry, we should probably stop talking.
I was just worried I missed an email because, you know, those times when like you'll send
yeah.
an email and I'll get like the replies to it, but I won't get the original until
yeah.
like a day later. That's been
yeah.
happening to my mom recently. With she has her cable system has an email that's through Gmail, but it's not, and she's getting emails like from me way late. It's
so weird. It's,
yeah.
I wonder if Kyle's.
But I when I set up the Calendly link, it hadn't like I hadn't used it in a couple of years,
mm-hmm.
and it hadn't connected to my Zoom account, so it couldn't generate
oh,
Zoom links.
I see.
But I was able to. It took me a little bit, but I was able to figure out how to add.
All right. I will call this evening's study session of the Champaign County Mental Health Board to order Wednesday, March 25th, 2026, 5:45 p.m. in the Shields Carter Room of the Bennett Administrative Center, Urbana, Illinois. May I have a roll call?
Okay, I got to do it from memory. Alejandro Gomez, Den Aras, who else? Tony Nichols, Kyle Patterson, Elaine Palencia, James Brandel, John Paul Joachim,
here,
and Molly McClay.
Here. All right. With that, we do not have a quorum, so we cannot approve the agenda formally, but we will go ahead and proceed with the contents of the meeting. I guess if we do not have a quorum, then that means also no public participation.
You can do that. You can have public participation. Oh. Can't vote on anything.
Yeah.
Though.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, we will go ahead and have public participation agency input, and there will be another point in the not official study session that we can do that as well. So as always, members of the community are welcome to speak with the mental health board and share their perspectives. We cannot respond directly to public input, but we may use it to inform future decisions. If you would like to make public input, you can approach the podium, you can fill out a comment card, or if you're online, you can put something into the chat or raise your hand in the Zoom. I may limit individual time to 5 minutes and total time to 20 minutes. Agency representatives and others providing input that might impact board actions should be aware of the Illinois Lobbyist Registration Act and take appropriate steps to be in compliance. With that, is there anybody online or in person who would like to make public comment? All right. It does not appear that there is anyone to make public comment right now, but there will be a time later in the meeting to do that. So we will move on to chairperson's comments. I'm Molly McClay, the chair of the Champaign County Mental Health Board, and I don't have any comments tonight because I'm very much looking forward to our presentations. So with that, I will close my comments and move to our associate director, Leon Bryson's comments.
All right. We're jumping right to it. All right. So... Good evening. This evening, you'll have the opportunity to learn about two long-standing mental health board-funded agencies. First, Dr. Janice Nance from Urbana Neighborhood Connection Center will present an overview of their recently funded program, the Community Study Center, which will include outcomes, services, and youth satisfaction and successes. Following her presentation, the Rosecrans team of Melissa Pappas, Dave Kellerhals, and Liz Miner will join us via Zoom to provide updates on their goals, services, challenges, and key aspects of their certified community behavioral health clinic model. At this time, please join us in welcoming Dr. Nance to the microphone. The floor is yours.
Thank you. All right. Well, good evening. As stated, I'm Dr. Janice Nance. I'm the executive director for Urbana Neighborhood Connection Center, where our youth will grow, our parents will help, and our community will share. So just a brief program overview. So our program participants in the Community Study Center, they come to us for after-school enrichment, and right now we're serving 68 kindergarten through eighth grade students. They also are with us during the summer, and our summer enrichment program usually hosts around 80 K through 8 students. And then we also have an intensive literacy program which runs Tuesdays and Thursdays concurrent with after school and summer enrichment program. That's 47 kindergarten through third grade students in intensive literacy. So other programs that are non-CSC would include our college and career readiness program and our summer youth employment program. The demographics of UNCC consist of 62 African American youth, 3 biracial, 2 Caucasian, 1 Latino, 12% extreme low income, 54% low income, and 24% middle income. And then our program components consist of academic support, recreational activities, STEAM and cultural enrichment, social emotional learning, transportation, and nutritious meals. So when we talk about what the center offers, our service offerings, so again, we provide nutritious meals to our students when we are open all day during the summer, as well as on our school out days. So when our school district is in session for professional development, we are open all day. And on those days, we offer breakfast, lunch, and snack. During our after-school program hours, we offer dinner. So group activities are led by qualified staff. It is a mixture of staff that are trained in-house at the center and those of us that are trained by trade. So we're either educators or social workers. We provide homework help. We have themed days. Every day has a theme. So Math Monday, Text Tuesday, Wisdom Wednesday, Think Thursday, and Fun Friday. So our students receive math, English language arts, social emotional learning, and cultural studies training. These sessions are taught, they're 35-minute sessions, and they're taught by caring, engaging instructors over the summertime and during the school year. So our 3D printing, sewing, all of our field trips are all led by our in-house staff, along with volunteers from the community and the University of Illinois. So the results, we have, you know, seen some amazing results with our young people. Intensive literacy, we've seen a lot of growth, and we've seen a lot of level increases in our students. But even in our general programming, you know, just their social development, we have consistently enrolled around 60 youth in our programs during the school year and around 80 or so during the summertime. And so one of the things recently that we noticed around January or so when this presentation was put together was that we had 30 boys, 38 girls. So we're almost neck and neck in terms of gender, which has in the past not been the case. We've been really, really girl heavy and lower on the boy end. And so we are starting to see more boys being enrolled in our programming. K all the way through 8. So the ages we're serving, again, ages 0 to 6, we have 9 of those students. And then ages 7 to 12, we have 31. And then ages 13 to 18, that is our teen reach group. There are 28 of them. So they are essentially our largest group is our teen reach group. And then 63 black students, 3 multiracial, 2 white, 68 English-speaking students, 2 that speak English but also speak French, and then 1 that speaks English but also Spanish. And so we have a very diverse group of students with unique needs and challenges and interests that we address at the center. Some of our program highlights or notable accomplishments. So in 2025, we celebrated 15 years of service to the community. It was our first gala that we had at the iHotel. It was a very well-attended and well-supported gala. We also hosted our first basketball game with the Urbana Police Department at the new Wellness Center, which is right around the corner from our center. And I'm trying not to laugh, but I'm still trying to figure out how I was put on the team to play. So every time I think about it, it makes me laugh. I thought I was coaching. But anyway, it was a very fun experience for our youth and our staff. The addition of an online application feature. So for several years, I've wanted to make things a little bit more accessible for families who can't come to the facility or that have trouble getting to the facility to fill out an application. So I wanted there to be a way for them to fill it out online. Recently, I worked with Solitude Marketing, which is a company ran by a friend of mine, and they actually got us up to date where parents can go online and enroll their children from our website, which is a really nice feature, but we do still keep in-house physical forms as well. We have four new program participants, and actually I'd like to add to that because, again, this was created in January. So we have 12 new program participants. But at the time when this presentation was created, we had ages 6, 8, 9, and 13. And so we do have a few more, as I stated, several in the Teen Reach group and then two in our K-2 group. We have had zero black male school suspensions and two black female school suspensions out of the 68 that are currently enrolled, which is a 0.03% suspension rate for our African-American students. That is one of the goals that we do track at the center. We have had zero school expulsions and zero criminal activity amongst our youth that we serve. Our family literacy program recently concluded, which actually I'm going to retract that statement because we actually had to cancel a couple sessions due to weather early on. So we are actually still in the family literacy program, but we are finishing up within the next couple of weeks. So it's a 10-week program with 10 families that we've brought in to work with them and teach them how to work with their young people on building literacy skills at home and just some quick and fun, easy ways that they can engage their youth in reading if they are resistant readers. Other recent community engagements. So we have gone to the Parkland Planetarium to see the Prairie Skies light show and the Season of Lights. That was our first, for many of our students, it was their first time going to the planetarium or even realizing that it exists in our community. That was a trip that I was very proud of and very happy that we were finally able to get them out there. And then we had our Black History Month kickoff in honor of Janice Mitchell. That is an annual event that is open to the community. And our students participate in that. They perform, they do tributes, they also set up tables. So our students are running the show. We pretty much facilitate and bring the materials, but they run the show. They host the program. They do the program flyers. They host the Black Inventors display table, the information tables. So it was really neat just getting a chance to see them, again, run the show and be a part of this event. Community partnerships for our programming. So these are people that come in voluntarily and work with our kids. So we have the CU Fab Lab, which is a STEAM, it's a community-facing STEAM-oriented program that sits on the campus of the University of Illinois. And then former, and I apologize, I hope I don't butcher this, it's either Bridgewater Banks and Lewis or Banks Bridgewater Lewis, but BBL, Music Academy. Instructors come in and do music lessons with our students as well. So participant satisfaction. When I was asked to speak about our participant satisfaction, I actually pulled up some of the messages because I felt like it would be good for people to see and hear directly from our parents, the youth that we serve, what they're saying, what they're thinking. So on the screen, there are several text messages, and these are, they're from our parent group me and our staff group me. So I made none of these up. These are real people that are in here, along with some pictures that I've included of some of the trips and products of projects that we've done. But I guess I'll just pick out a couple comments. So one is from a parent that we've had two students that are her children for a long time now. And she says, as a single mom, I appreciate you all giving me a few unexpected hours of me time. Thank you so much. I'm going to skip down a little bit. Thank you for all you and your staff does. I appreciate your community lessons and love. My daughter just loves UNCC. It has been a great experience for her. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And then I'll skip over to the UNCC staff side. So, I know, boss lady, I hate that, but that's what they say. And this is someone who's one of our longtime staff members, but before the mental health board, and I will say this again, that before the mental health board, we reconnected. We had hit kind of a rough patch, which, you know, caused some delays in payments and me taking out personal loans, et cetera, just to make sure that we kept things going. And so, you know, one of our staff says, boss lady, and I do apologize, it's kind of hard to read, but she basically just, you know, thanking me and saying that she appreciates all that I do for the center and for the staff, that it doesn't go unnoticed. And so We have parents, again, on one side, and, you know, that's just some of the comments. I see one in the middle that's, you know, congratulating the staff and saying, as a parent, I would like to thank you all for another great summer program. You all outdo yourselves every year, and this year is no different. My son loves coming to the center. I appreciate y'all. So, you know, these are the comments that we work for. These are the types of, you know, things that we see in here. A parent recently had posted on our Facebook page that she appreciated the Black, Brown, and Beautiful Family Literacy Program because her son has improved two grade levels this school year based on the one-on-one instruction time that he's getting with us at the center. And so those are the things that warm our hearts. Those are the things that we live for and that we work for, you know, at the center. And those are the types of things that, you know, Mental Health Board supports when you all are pouring into us, then we can turn around and pour into our young people in this way. So just a few obstacles or constraints. On June 13th of last year, our newest vehicle, it was a 2024 Ford Transit 350. I traveled to Springfield, I believe, to get that one. Yes, to Springfield. And so we didn't even have it 6 months, and it got wrecked. It was totaled by an oncoming car driver. So the good thing is that there were no children aboard the vehicle. Our driver was the only one that was impacted, and she was able to get treated pretty quickly. Everything's all good now. But again, the van is totaled, and so that took us down a vehicle and, you know, makes routes a little bit longer, pickup time a little bit longer. But we make it work as best we can. Space continues to be an issue. It's a good problem. It's a problem that I know is not unique to the center, but we definitely are getting more and more requests, especially now with us having that online website up and going, and we've got people are asking every day about, you know, when our summer applications will be available, and we are working on that. And so, you know, that growth, we're only expecting it to continue to grow, and, you know, with the word getting out there more and more, and with us, you know, getting more people to help us with our marketing and our advertising, I just can only expect that we're going to have more of a request and more of a need come into our door. So that, of course, is, you know, again, a good problem, but it is an obstacle or a constraint, if you will. So future objectives. We want to purchase a new 15-passenger vehicle to replace the old one that we had. We are hopeful and prayerful to take ownership of our now 16-year property at Urbana Neighborhood Connection Center, 1401 East Main. That is our home. I spend more time there than I do at my house, and most of our staff are there with me for part of that time. And so, you know, it really is our home and our kids' home during the summer. So we want to try, you know, at some point to look at possible expansion of our space to service more youth and families, an installation of a shed or storage space for optimization. So our game room right now is being used as both the game room that our students play in and do team building activities in, and it also doubles as a storage space, which takes up some of that room that they could potentially be using. So I've applied and applied and applied for different funds to try to get a shed bolted to the ground outside, you know, in our yard, and we just have not, you know, come across that yet, but at some point we'd like to cross that bridge. Recruitment of new college and career readiness program participants. So we recently took a college trip. We took them to Nashville, Tennessee last week, and we spent 3 days visiting 5 colleges: Fisk University, Tennessee State, Meharry Medical College, American Baptist College, and Vanderbilt University. So those are the 5 schools that we visited in over those 3 days that we were there. And, you know, it became real that we have a 2-year-old that started with us when she was really even too young to be in the program, but she was with us all day, every day, and now she's getting ready to go off to college. And so it got real for us. It gets real for us every year when our seniors graduate. It's always a bittersweet thing. And so we're going to be recruiting more students because we have some seniors that are graduating and going on to bigger and better things. And then the continued provision of quality programming and services, you know, is always our goal, and to make sure that our five core programs, as well as our additional programs and our additional initiatives like the garden and the closet, stay up and running. So we are continuously fundraising. We are continuously seeking funding opportunities just to make sure that we are keeping things afloat and able to serve the people that we're serving and to expand those efforts. So additional funding prospects. So some of our current funding sources are listed there on the screen. I won't go through all of them, but just, you know, to point out a few: United Way of Champaign County, the City of Urbana, and then, of course, Champaign County Mental Health Board, and then other potential or future funding sources. So, again, I've been applying and applying, and I'm going to continue because I feel like at some point, you'll get 1,000 no's, and at some point they got to give you a yes. So I'm going to apply again for the Community Foundation of East Central Illinois funding to try to get a shed when they come out with their capital grants, and then the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Development, as well as community support from donors. So some relevant success stories. I've talked about a few, but here's just a few others that I'll highlight. So we had a seventh grade student that was tested at the center. He came to us reading at a second grade level, and he is now reading on a fifth grade level. I personally have tutored this young man. I personally have tutored this young man, and I've watched him grow, and I've seen his eyes light up. Now when we get ready to read, and he hated reading when we started, he would try anything he could to get out of it. He would cuss at us. He would, you know, fly out the back door. Like, we'd have to catch him, literally, when he first got to us. But, you know, he's reading well. He looks forward to it now. He'll come find me if I forget. Dr. J, are we reading today? So I'm just super excited and happy to see his progress and to see where he's at now, not just with literacy, but socially as well. In December, we had our College and Career Readiness Alumni Panel. Four of our former program participants, three college students and one tradesperson, returned to the center to share insights with our current high school students. This is something we do every year over their winter break. And recently, we also had one of our students who's at Fort Wayne in military training. He came back and was like, "Do you remember me?" And I was looking at him like, "Do I?" You know, it took me a second because he's like full beard and mustache now. He towers over me. And I was like, "Sir, I don't think so." You know, but then the more we got to talking, I was like, "Oh my God, like, yes, you were like third grade." And, you know, back when I was working with your group as a staff member, I do remember you. So we have that happening, and then in May, we will celebrate the graduation, again, of three of our high school seniors, all of whom have been accepted into the schools of their choice. So we have been really, really diligent about making sure that they've gotten in their essays on time. We've had Illinois Student Assistance Commission come and do financial aid workshops with them to take some of that load off of the parents. And so we are excited that they are getting to that point. Yeah, so I know, abrupt ending, but I do, I do, again, thank you for your time and allowing me to share just some of the work that we do and some of the things that we're extremely proud of, the services that we've been able to provide.
Right, thank you so much for sharing. We have a small but mighty crowd here tonight, but thank you. That's great. Opportunity for board and staff to ask questions and make comments.
Yeah, I like to go first. I noticed that you're sweating because you have some water in your eyes, and it is kind of hot in here, so I get it. As you were talking, my heart got bigger and bigger and bigger. I appreciate what I heard, and I just took a few notes, and I'll just bullet point it. The parents group me. I love that. I know that your program is a youth and family centered program, and so where your the youth and the and the family's voices are being heard,
yes,
which is key. Providing food is essential when you're working with youth.
Mm-hmm.
And I also love the online application. Question that I have for you is, you mentioned you're outgrowing the center. Could you describe what would be the ideal center for you?
Oh, man.
If you could have it your way.
I'm going to say two things. One of them, I don't even know if I should say, but I'm going to say it. Just because, you know, this is ideal. This is my vision. This is what, you know, I have seen many times as I've driven through town and on the way home, on the way to work. I see it one of two ways. Either we keep, you know, we always want to keep our home base, you know, and I, you know, would imagine we either keep our elementary primarily housed in that building, our K-5, and then across the street, there is an empty lot that's been vacant for years. It's a dart lot, but it's not actually connected to that factory building. It's just an open lot across the street with nothing, and no one ever uses it. And at some point, if we can get the capital funding, I would love for us to build something for our teens in that space. And something our staff have asked about for years, and something my mom, who founded the center, really wanted was a gym. And so we either build a gym onto our space, or we just use that area as a teen center, and then we take our kids around the corner to the new wellness center if they come up with a group rate, as I've asked. And so so if not, then we build onto our teen center to have a gym. Now, that's one way. The other way that I envision it to work in our expansion would be the lovely building that is around the corner that we used to take our kids to all the time. The Brooklyn Center has a phenomenal gym that I grew up playing in, Saturday mornings, hooping, basketball. Our kids love playing over there. There are office, true offices over there where you don't necessarily hear all the noise through the windows like we do. That is designed more for our children. And there are whole rooms this size where people can do activities and not have to do as much, you know, to try to make it work because they're already workable spaces. And so either, you know, we get that Brookings building, or we get a building across the street from the center, and we split up, do our elementary and our teens, and at a certain point we come together as one UNCC family to do activities in one facility, or like when we have our end of the summer dinner, we do that across the street. But that's those are the two ways that I see it. Either we get that whole other big space, or we build onto the space that we have and just get one situated across the street.
Thank you, Dr. J. I think you'll get there.
Thank you, Mr. Bryson.
What can we do to help you get Brookings? I love Brookings, and I miss being there. How can we? Should we beg the county board to just donate Brookings? I don't know if they like us that much.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and I'm not, you know, 100% sure how that works. I think our first step right now is to try to, you know, make sure that we take ownership of the one building that we're in now, and then we look at, you know, doing that. But yeah, I mean, any advocacy or support that we can get from our grantors, I think, you know, definitely couldn't hurt when we're going to bid for, you know, for that space. So definitely appreciate you bringing that up.
I just, Brookings shouldn't be empty. It's such a great space. I'm sorry to jump in. This is a board conversation.
I mean, I used to play soccer when I was a kid. The Urbana Park District would have their soccer games over there.
Yep.
And on the field. You know, just hearing your presentation reminds me that, like, most of the time you're not going to see the fruits of your labor when you're doing work like this. You get to see some of it, but obviously you don't get to see the whole life path these kids follow that they wouldn't have otherwise followed without this program, you know, and it's really great to see. Because you're not only, you know, helping these children grow, you're also helping the parents grow too and learn about their kids and how to help them succeed and thrive. I mean, it's a great program. Definitely, you know, what we need more of, definitely hard to build quickly, it takes a long time, you know, and it takes a lot of effort and just persistence, and you definitely have that. I did have a couple questions on, like, admission. Is it just first come, first serve for application, or do you guys, like, kind of try to make sure you have a certain mix of different backgrounds or, like, socioeconomic status, academic success, things like that?
So we don't really have, like, disqualifiers or anything like that. It really is, you know, based on who signs up. So kind of like a first come, first serve. But, I mean, the reality is we don't really turn children away. Okay. And so even, like, what we do usually is, like, let's say we're getting ready to enter a new term. Like, we're getting ready to enter summer in a few months. So usually our students that were already at the center during the school year would kind of have, like, first dibs. So we'll open it up to those parents first, and we'll notify them, like, hey, we're getting ready to open up. You know, they still have to submit a separate enrollment form, but, you know, they'll know it's coming up, and then they can, if they want, then they can fill that out first. And then, you know, a couple weeks later, then we open it up, and we start putting the information out there to the schools and to, you know, the community and through our Facebook page and stuff. So that is kind of how it works. It's like we just start with those that are already in the house and then kind of open it up from there. But nothing like in terms of income or socioeconomic status or
like academic anything. Challenges or like
no, because even with that, like we have and that's one of the things that on our enrollment form, like we do have to ask, you know, if a student has an IEP, an individualized education plan, or they have a 504 plan to support their learning. And the reason why we ask for that is because when we're doing those courses, they are taught by licensed educators over the summer, and so we want to make sure that whatever accommodations they need, they're getting even over the summer, even though it's not the school year.
That's really great that you have someone that has all that background to do all that and help those kids in that way, not just someone that has a great heart that wants to just volunteer but doesn't have like the expertise to really help kids that might have other challenges that they may need help with.
Thank you.
If you I saw that you had the literacy, you know, intensive literacy. Is that just everybody just generally, or is that for specific kids who have academic, like, academic literacy challenges, like reading, writing, learning difficulties?
So the program is designed for kindergarten through third grade. So all of our kindergarten through third graders go through testing. So they go through a testing first, and then if they test out of the program, so if they're reading above grade level, then they're automatically tested out of the program. And we still do reading activities with them, of course, and Text Tuesday stuff and all that, but they don't, you know, meet one-on-one with an instructor to do that intensive stuff, the phonemic awareness and all that. So it really is just designed for K through three, but we have had some students that, like, you know, young man that I mentioned that I worked with, we also put him through intensive literacy training as well because he is in seventh grade, but he's coming in at a second grade reading level. And so we will make those adjustments when we need to with a student.
Yeah. And I guess for anyone listening, like the most important factor in a person's life is their reading level in the third grade. Because after that, you're no longer learning to read, you're reading to learn math, history, science. And if you're behind at that point, really hard to catch up in life after that. What I was going to ask. Do you guys occasionally pick up that the patient or the child, I'm a physician.
Oh, so no, that's all right.
Does the child have a learning disorder possibly, and tell the parents that they should request an evaluation from the school for a possible reading or writing learning disorder?
Often.
Okay.
I think next Thursday, I want to say either Wednesday or Thursday of next week, I have a meeting that I'm going to with a social worker and teacher administrator at one of the schools.
That's really great.
To support the parent. The parent will be there as well. But yeah, we do definitely make those observations, and then we do, recommend or suggest, you know, getting an evaluation if we see something that, you know, is concerning or something that we're like, okay, this is an unusual challenge or this is an extreme challenge for this student at this level.
Because you seem to have more one-on-one experience than, say, a teacher may with her or his classroom of like 30 people or 30 children. And so you might be able to pick something up that maybe someone else might have missed. So that's really great. I do really like the diverse funding that you guys have as well. The only other question I guess I had, it's kind of a strange one, not too relevant, but was, didn't the insurance cover the car being totaled, or did you have to use the money for other things that public agency.
Yeah. To the B, we did get a refund on the vehicle. It was not exactly what
It never is, and you can't buy the same vehicle with the money they give you, right? From insurance.
No, yeah. But we keep the doors open, if you will. We had to use that along with those personal loans. So, yeah.
Thank you so much for being here. Appreciate.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you for having me and allowing me to talk about what we do.
Thank you so much. I have some thoughts, and maybe I guess I'll start with, well, first of all, I am so glad that we are funding you again, and I wish more board members were here tonight, because I know that everybody was really excited, and I know the meeting that we had where we approved your funding was really impactful for everybody. So I hope that the board members who couldn't make it tonight are able to watch this later so that they can hear about all these great things that you're doing. One thing I was wondering about, kind of along the lines of, knowing how many youth are coming into your program, how do you advertise or recruit, and are there any new avenues you're looking at for that?
Sure. So, we've always traditionally participated in community events, large-scale community events. So in the summertime, we take our tent out, our tablecloths, we're packing up all of our materials and giveaway items, and we're going out to King Park, Douglas Park. We've even been out in Champaign, Centennial Park and places like that for, the Bright Star event that happens out there, and Juneteenth, Juddy Rhodes Day, CU Day. So, we're at all the community events to recruit, to share with community members the resources that we offer in the programming, but then in the schools as well. And I think that's one of the unique things about my mom's position, who founded the center, and then I fell into that. So then my position, being both a district family liaison and an executive director of the center, is that, having that ability during the day as I'm in and out of different schools to drop off our flyers and say, hey, I'm going to put this on your front desk, for when families come in, or hey, parent-teacher conference is coming up, can I post this? I'm just going to get some tape and tape it to the glass windows. And so, and we're giving it to teachers as well. We're emailing it out through Skyward. So there's a lot of different methods we use in the schools, in the community, but then even just our social media. So all of our staff, once, if I update our flyer, or if we have an event coming up, or when we put out the scholarship information, stuff like that, we create a new flyer each year, and then our staff share it from their personal social medias. I always encourage them to do that. And then I share from my personal social media, but then it's also on the center's page as well, for people that follow the center's page. And so we try to keep that updated. At one point we did have, to answer your question about new avenues, at one point we did have an Instagram page. It's not active anymore, but we are working with one of our U of I volunteers to try to get that back up and going too, because sometimes, as they say, a picture is worth 1,000 words. And so sometimes less text and more picture, or more video, short video clips, can be more impactful. And so we want to get our Instagram page up and going again.
You know how hard it can be to keep up with the social media type stuff, but I agree that that would be a great avenue. And I'm glad that you have, that students are getting involved. Because I remember when I moved here for my MSW in 2009, because you guys opened right around then, right?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, because I remember hearing about it when I first moved here, and then I saw a lot of friends and students that I've worked with getting involved. But I think having worked with a lot of U of I students, sometimes they're I want to do something, but they're just kind of milling around. So them being able to contribute actively to something like that seems really helpful. I was just really struck by you talking about the student who how he changed from trying to run away from reading to wanting to read. Because I think sometimes we underestimate the importance of reading. I think kind of in both directions, that not being able to read has like detrimental impacts on mental health. There's so much, I mean, a lot, I'm a therapist and a lot of people I'm just working with on like feeling shame about all these different issues in their life. And I can imagine that being a huge one. And then on the flip side, being able to read and having that, is such a lifeline for people to like, that's something that nobody can ever take away, is the ability to read and to have that as an option when there's a lot of other things that are like so difficult around us, to be able to be like, I can sit down with a book and read. And I mean, at times escape.
Yes.
It's huge. And hearing you like talk about how that unlocked for that kid was just magical. So thank you so much for your work. I did want to ask if you would share the story about the basketball.
Oh, gosh. So
if you're willing to, if you don't want to, it's okay.
It was hilarious. Well, it wasn't that day because I thought I was going to die. So we had scheduled the basketball game to be the last day or the second to last day of the summer program last summer. And from my understanding, it was supposed to be like some of our Urbana Police Department folks on one team. And then, you know, the center forms a team with some staff and kids combined and then, you know, be on opposite sides. So I thought that I was coaching opposite of Deshaun Williams, the mayor, who's a great, close, very close friend of mine. But I thought that we were coaching opposite, so we were talking trash, and we, you know, we come in and we're having fun, all this stuff. And then I'm like, he's in plain clothes, I'm in plain clothes, and. But I had my little like gym bag. I always have a gym bag anyway, and it was in the car. And then, you know, they're like, okay, yeah, so suit up. I'm like, wait, what? Like, suit up? I'm like, what do you mean? I'm coaching. And they're like, no, you're on this list, as you know, you're playing. I was like, what? So I end up, I didn't start, but I subbed in. And I felt it the next day. It was bad. I'm definitely not in my 16, 17 year old shape. I will just say that, but it was fun. It was a lot of fun. The kids, you know, they played hard. UPD played hard. You know, it was just kind of cool to see like some of our kids interacting with, you know, like Officer McKinney was one that I remember being there. He's really cool. And then, it was another officer. I can't remember his name, but he was like running down the court and yelling the craziest stuff. And I'm like, what? Like, it was fun, you know? So like I said, over a while, I was hurt. I was hurt physically. I was hurt. But it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you for sharing that. And I'm sure the kids just like loved you playing. As much as it probably
they had a whole cheer section like opposite of me. There's a video clip of it. I think, I don't know if it's on my, I'll have to pull it up. Maybe if I find it, I'll have to send you all a link. But seriously, it was a whole cheer section that they created across the thing. And like, as soon as I got ready to go, and they're like, you're up. And I was trying to put everybody, you go ahead, you got it. You know, I was trying to put everybody in front of me, but they sent me out there and the kids were across from me. And they're like, Dr. J. I was like, okay, I got to go out here now. Like, I was trying to send anybody but me, but okay. So yeah, it was definitely one of those memorable moments though, you know, and I think that was what made it worthwhile. Like, you know, was just knowing that the kids really got into it and that then some of our like kids were, that didn't want to play initially. I think once they saw their peers having fun or they saw like that it wasn't super competitive. Like it wasn't like, oh, anybody's going to judge you if you're not the, you know, the top scorer or, you know, you're not the greatest defender. Then they kind of got into it and they wanted to play too. So it was cool. We got kids that weren't even initially signed up that ended up going in the game.
That's an amazing story and just seems like such an uplifting event too.
Yeah.
Great memory for everybody. Is there anybody else who has questions or comments? Including, we can open it up to anybody online who wants to make a comment.
There are a bunch of people online, including a member of the DD board. Dr. Fowler is there, but I don't know if she has questions. So.
Not to put anybody on the spot, but I figure there's not as many of us here tonight, so might as well open it up.
Well, I've had the opportunity to do some volunteer work at UNCC and also meet with kids through the CASA program. And I just think it's one of the hidden jewels of our community. So I can't say enough about it. Thank you.
Good to see you.
Nice to be able to join. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing. Is there anyone else who has comments?
Dr. Fowler's cup of cappuccino or whatever that is looking really good.
Facts.
All right. Well, thank you, Dr. J, Dr. Nance, for your outstanding work that you do. And we appreciate your time here today. I especially appreciate you getting your materials to us way in advance so that we could prepare and have these materials in the board for the board members. So thank you again. And up next, we have another dynamic presentation. And I won't waste any time because they've been patient, and we're excited to hear from them. And this is the Rosecrans team. Take it away.
Hi, everybody. Can you guys see my screen okay?
Yes.
All right, great. I want to introduce myself. My name is Melissa Pappas. I have the honor of being the executive director for Rosecrans of Central Illinois. I've been the executive director since early 2022. And we have a phenomenal relationship with the Champaign County Mental Health Board, who really has assisted us in being able to provide a multitude of services to individuals in the community. But today, I think we're going to talk about something a little bit different for you guys. We are going to talk about our certified community behavioral health clinic that you guys will know most by our Walnut location. So that's where our CCBHC is held, and all of the services outside or inside of that building are considered certified community behavioral health services. So with me today, I have Dave Keller-Halls, who's the director of clinical services for Rosecrans of Central Illinois, and Liz Miner, who is the director of crisis services. So let me make sure. Dave, go ahead, take it away.
I'm going to do a quick mic check because I'm using earbuds and sometimes it's funky when you try to connect. Okay, good. It's all thumbs up. Yes. Thank you for allowing us to come speak with you about CCBHC today. You know, the model really centers on just expanding access to care and integrating mental health and substance use abuse treatment to create a more seamless and collaborative system. Most of you who have been, you know, either in the field or had some encounters with mental health and substance use services, they sometimes were quite siloed in the past. And Rosecrans was one of those as well. And, you know, that caused, you know, you can think of an example of someone coming in for mental health services and during the assessment, someone's like, well, you've got to take care of this substance use issue before we can see you in mental health, you know, and then so they switch them over to the mental health side, whether it was a different agency or a different department within the company, and, you know, not a great first impression for an individual coming in for services. And so that's something that is one of the cores to CCBHC, which we are thankful for, because we understand that it's got to happen at the same time. It doesn't have to be one or the other. 24/7 crisis services really plays a vital role, and it's a critical access point for individuals that are coming in and seeking behavioral health services. Liz is going to talk a little bit more about that later, but the model puts a strong emphasis on recovery, wellness, and trauma-informed practices, and is really designed to meet the unique needs of our community and ultimately improve our overall outcomes and well-being. Scope of services. So we've got, in order to be a CCBHC, you've got to have these nine core services. Liz is going to get into those in the next slide, but if for some reason you as the agency doesn't provide that service or directly provide that service, you can partner with DCSOs, which stands for Designated Collaborating Organizations. And so that allows us to maybe not have to create a whole new program or department and partner with these individuals who are also held to the same criteria and standards that, that the agency holding the CCBHC does. And then all of the services within CCBHC are focused on, you know, the individual driving the treatment goals, us meeting them where they're at, and helping them get closer to either no longer needing our services or preparing to step down or transition to a lower level of care and kind of continue that journey through the continuum to long-lasting stabilization. And then also ensuring strong cultural competencies within our staff at all levels. It's critical for giving every individual the best chance to reach their goals and be successful through this continuum.
Okay, I'm also going to mic check because it like muted and unmuted really fast. Good, thank you, Dave. All right, hi, good evening, everybody. So really with CCBHC, the core services that we have to have in order to be the CCBHC, or a lot of them were services that we were already providing, but the CCBHC really allowed us to really put more intentional effort and clinical focus into what does this look like for full holistic and human-centered care. As Dave mentioned, I will get very in-depth on the crisis services one on the next slide. But really the 9 core services are 24/7 crisis access, screening, assessment, and diagnosis, client-centered treatment planning, outpatient substance use and mental health care, primary or outpatient primary care screenings, targeted case management, the psychiatric rehabilitation services, so talking about psychiatric medication access and the things that go with that, peer support and family supports, and then a continuation of intensive outpatient community-based services with a focus on veterans. The one piece of CCBHC that was really cool for us as an organization is it really allowed us to put a bigger emphasis on peer-led recovery. So we have a phenomenal team for our peer support team. It's comprised, I believe, we're up to 6 phenomenal peers from the community who work with clients who are interested in services, maybe pre-contemplative, have some questions, or maybe have been through services before, but want a more peer-centered approach. So they're partnered with a person with lived experience and they walk them through their entire treatment process. So that's something we've been really excited about with CCBHC. The other component, so starting from the top, so crisis services. This was not new to Rosecrans. We have been providing 24/7 crisis services in this region for quite a long time. The biggest difference with the CCBHC is that we now also have to look at crisis-based substance use. So that really what that looks like is post overdose. So people who present at emergency departments, either for intentional or unintentional overdoses, MCR, mobile crisis response, now also serves as an access point to helping give that person education about medication-assisted recovery, but also giving in-moment referrals for outpatient or inpatient level of care to help treat their substance use disorders. We do and continue to carry Narcan, things like that, in our community bags and things like that. And then we do have access to MAR within 24 hours of a referral being made post-event.
Another core service for the CCBHC is psychiatric services. The Champaign County Mental Health Board in the past has helped us with youth psychiatric services, which really allowed Rosecrans to get a solid foundation of providing that youth care to Walnut that we didn't really have previously. Now we have multiple psychiatric providers that are able to serve both our youth and adult populations. What the psychiatric services really focus on is that medication education. We have a lot of clients that we see take their medications when they feel bad, and then when they start to feel better, medication compliance sometimes dwindles. And so that education piece is huge. We have providers going to groups or talking to families about how important medication compliance is in someone's treatment. We also take time in talking about how families and caregivers can really take a central role in the psychiatric services that we offer. We also have all of our psychiatric services integrated into our other community services. We have an assertive community treatment program that is an intensive case management program for the seriously mentally ill population in our community, where they have their own nurse, their own psychiatrist, and their own caseworkers going out and providing treatment in the community, in their homes, where the individuals feel the most comfortable and spend the most time. And that integration has been huge for stabilizing this population of individuals who really struggle with, you know, isolation and, you know, difficulty with follow-through of services. We have a phenomenal psychiatrist that is fully dedicated to the ACT program, so we are incredibly honored to have him. And then we also added a piece of dietary education for our clients, because the CCBHC, like David said, is, and Liz said, it's really a holistic approach. So it's also about physical wellness, and really collaborating with community partners. Ascend here in Urbana really helps with the dietary aspects. They also offer disordered eating services for individuals that and come into treatment, and that is the struggle. So we've really been able to expand and partner and get people care that they need that otherwise we weren't able to do. Next, David's up to talk about mental health, outpatient, and substance use services.
Okay. And as you look at this slide, again, not much different than what we had been doing before CCBHC, but a few things that are newer in that, like, you know, the mental health and substance use has to be integrated. You may have a few individuals that may just have one or the other, but oftentimes someone suffering from substance use issues, there's probably an underlying mental health concern. And, you know, someone with mental health issues, again, not all the time, but there are sometimes common themes of maybe secondary substance use. So just ensuring that, again, there's that holistic view of it. If the person needs both, they get it both at the same time. And so that, as well as CCBHC really frowns on wait lists, right? And so we had to get really creative to get people in quickly. And so peer support comes into play, a big part of that, in that someone can start seeing somebody, getting some of the emergency case management needs met while they're being assigned their clinician. So they've been a huge help. And then even after they're assigned the clinician, peer support's still there to help fill in the gaps, you know, in between sessions, if they need some help. I think maybe someone goes into more detail on that later, so I'll stop there. But the other thing that is, I think, exciting is that we've always pushed and been focused on evidence-based practices, but it was really hard to track in terms of how are we ensuring that our clinicians are using it consistently and appropriately and to the model? And so CCBHC forced us to look at that, like how, well, you're going to have to track it now. And so our electronic health record did not really, that's not data points that it could pull out, because it's in the narrative of a progress note. So we got some new technology that's pretty exciting. I won't go into detail, but it sort of sits on top of Avatar and can pull out that data from the progress note. It creates a dashboard for our supervisors and those above the supervisors as well, to help give a point in time picture of how often, what EBPs are being used, how often and how effective. And that can then be used in the clinical supervisions that we're having with our direct care staff. So that's one of the super exciting things that that has come out with some of the new requirements. And that's all I have for that one.
And then moving on to the treatment planning aspect, like Dave mentioned, through the CCBHC, we have to be fully integrated and holistic in our care. So the one really cool improvement that we were able to make with the CCBHC is we now all operate off of one shared treatment plan. So it doesn't matter what program a person is in at the Walnut location. Everybody is using the same treatment plan. There's no questioning what clients are working on across multiple programs, which was something really cool. And with that, it really is that person and family-centered treatment planning approach in the CCBHC. We have to be very individualized in our treatment planning based on their assessments. Everybody receives the same assessment. We don't have separate assessments for substance use or mental health. So all of these pieces fit into this one spot to really capture the client's story and what the needs are. We continue to have to address prevention needs, medical and behavioral health care needs. So if they need dental, we, you know, put things in there as far as, you know, treatment planning on how we're going to help them achieve dental goals and things like that. Developed with the client, endorsed by the client and the family, it is a collaborative treatment planning approach. And then also having a comprehensive approach to addressing all the services and recovery supports needed, as well as having documented advanced directives. Through the Illinois CCBHC, the CCBHC designated the IMCANS and IETP, which is a what they call the treatment plan. That is the assessment that we use for all of our clients who are coming into care outside of crisis services. But then we also have to do treatment planning following any crisis events that happen. That's done through the state safety plan, as well as other prevention plans and things that we do along the way as we get people who've had a crisis connected to care. And then the next piece is care coordination. The CCBHC, this is one of the biggest focuses that we have to have, is how are we care coordinating across not just Rosecrans CCBHC programs, but also with other community providers. So we have a pretty big emphasis on those pieces. We help assist clients with their appointments at other providers. So peer support and clinicians and the whole care team really works together on what does it look like for a client's week. A lot of their clinicians or staff that are working with them help them keep their appointments straight, help them schedule or reschedule depending on what the needs are. Also looking at how we can help them with benefits like their Medicaid and other public assistance. So making sure that they continue to have access to needed services with minimal financial impact to the client. We are partnered with Promise Healthcare, or FQHC, and a couple other entities here in town to help with the care coordination expectation pieces, especially when it comes to primary care. We as Rosecrans, not primary care providers, but we have wonderful partners in the communities who help bridge that gap for our clients. We also have to track our clients' admissions and discharges from inpatient, like hospital stays, residential facilities, ER visits, things like that. So we have a really cool software. We use ADT and IHPA, and those help us track where our clients are after they sign an informed consent for it. So we get real-time updates as to what's going on with clients and what their needs may be. It's been super valuable when clients maybe have relapsed, overdosed, or needed higher level psychiatric care, keeping their care team in the loop. And then also with the care coordination, it requires not only care coordination amongst the agencies, but also we have to include very specific people in that care coordination process depending on the client's needs. So including schools, other welfare agencies, criminal justice agencies, things like DCFS, DCBYS, other human services organizations, the VA, and other acute care hospitals.
All right, so workforce. So yeah, the CCBHC model is built on multidisciplinary teams that include licensed medical clinical providers, case managers, crisis clinicians of various specialties and areas, peer support specialists, all of that bring a strong level of expertise in their respective disciplines. So we're very lucky with Rosecrans to have a pretty robust talent acquisition team that helps us find all these individuals that we need and hopefully in a timely manner and kind of take some of the weight off of the individual hiring manager themselves so they can do the work on the ground with supervising and managing the program, as well as an entire department dedicated to staff education and development. And so that comes in handy quite a bit that, it takes a village to make this happen. And so to have those two components has been super helpful in making it possible. And so the staff development is supported through comprehensive training plans focused on all the things you see there and more. Ensuring that on a regular basis that these competencies and training components are not only being completed, but they're being applied and that there's observation within even individual sessions and groups of a clinician, no matter what their level of expertise, veteran or new, is having a periodic sort of peer review and observation as to ensure that the things are going the way that they're supposed to. And then, of course, leveraging our DCOs to ensure that that they're doing what they're supposed to do as well, since we are also, you know, held accountable for our partners. And so making sure we have strong partnerships with them and transparency to make sure we're all on the same page and delivering the same quality of care.
So now on to maybe the less exciting items, which is kind of the financial component of a CCBHC. So the state of Illinois received a demonstration opportunity to be a CCBHC demonstration state by the federal government. So HFS is the partner that oversees the CCBHCs. And how CCBHCs work is it goes off of a prospective payment system. And so Rosecrans gets paid per Medicaid encounter, and it's a rate that every single organization receives, and it's based on the cost that it takes to provide the service. So nobody's PPS rate is the same. They're all different because everybody's costs are different. And then those costs go into what the rate is. And the goal of CCBHC is to come out at nothing. At $0, right? Because the purpose of it is that you are fully able to pay all of your expenses. And that's what the PPS rate will allow you to do. And the PPS rate fluctuates. And so it for every so many years that you are a CCBHC, you can get re-rated and your rate can change based off of your costs for the services that you are providing. The thing about the PPS rate is that we only generate a rate if an individual has Medicaid. So the CCBHC is primarily focused on individuals with Medicaid, family, adults, youth, that there is no age range for services for CCBHC, but the primary component of it is you only are able to generate a bill if they have Medicaid. If they are unfunded, self-pay, or private, you do not generate any rate. So the service that you delivered goes, it's non-reimbursable. However, that is okay because that is built into our costs. So the philosophy of CCBHC and the philosophy of Rosecrans is that nobody gets turned away, regardless of funding source. When you come into our facilities, you will receive the same services as somebody that has funding. And so it has been an honor to be a part of this demonstration because we don't have to be concerned about providing services to unfunded families. And those individuals don't have to be worried that their services will be cut off if they lose their funding, especially in the political climate that we're in right now, that it is an incredibly scary time. Another bit to this is that a PPS rate is only generated one time per day. So if a client comes in and receives four different services, we only get reimbursed for one of those services. That is also, though, taken into account when you're looking at cost. But it is something that is very different from a fee-for-service program. A fee-for-service program, you bill. You bill however long that service took, and then you are reimbursed what Medicaid or the insurance organization feels that service is worth. And we all know that rate is never how much it costs to provide that service to any organization. Rosecrans is not special in that. There are tons of organizations in this community that have to accept a rate that we all know is unacceptable. And what CCBHC does is it takes all of that into account and reflects that in your PPS rate. So you are getting the reimbursement for, like I said, what that service costs. It's taking into account all of the individuals that are struggling with losing their funding. And it is allowing places like Rosecrans thresholds, heritage, behavioral health. These are all CCBHCs in the state of Illinois to continue to be able to service individuals that don't have funding because of these new rates. But it does come with a catch at times, right? We all know that a lot of our clients are in a multitude of services. And we know that when they walk in that door, we want all of them to get that service that day, because sometimes we don't know when we're going to see them again. And so oftentimes clients are getting 2 to 3 services in one day. Only one of those services is a qualifying rate. And so there are challenges, right? There are significant challenges to becoming a CCBHC. I wish it was all rainbows and sunshine. I do, for the most part. It has been just an honor and such a phenomenal experience that we have been able to take part in, along with the 19 other CCBHCs in the state of Illinois. But some of the challenges that we see are staff turnover. We had to expand some of our programming to meet the requirements and add a significant amount onto our staffing plan. We have launched new programs in the community, and some of those are very niche programs that you're really looking for sometimes those unicorns in the community who have such a dedication to a certain population, and that could sometimes take time to fill. So staff turnover and really not turnover. Our turnover has drastically decreased since we started CCBHC, but really it's about staff vacancies, having to open up these new positions. And we know that filling positions throughout central Illinois can often be a struggle. Another challenge for us is that unfunded population. With this current administration, we know that clients are losing their benefits at a quite alarming rate. We are honored to have the Champaign County Mental Health Board fund our benefits case management program. You have funded that program for so many years, and that is the sole focus of that case manager, is to ensure that when clients are losing their Medicaid coverage, that she engages with them immediately to get them to get their coverage back. Anybody that walks through our door, the first thing that we ask is for their Medicaid card or number, and we're able to look them up in our system in the state system immediately, because at times we are the first people to let them know their coverage has lapsed. And so we really start that process before they're even clients at Rosecrans, because we know that getting them coverage not only benefits them from seeking our services, but physical wellness as well, dental. So it's incredibly important for the community that we get them covered. And so being able to have that benefits case manager work on getting people their coverage back or get them coverage they've never had it before, we have found has been incredibly essential to the CCBHC. Rosecrans is also incredibly unique in the sense that, yes, we have a CCBHC, but that we offer a multitude of other services that are traditional fee-for-service or residential. So we are constantly having to straddle both sides of the line, because residential programs are not considered CCBHC programs at all. And there are also other programs that are not covered under CCBHC. And so these are two completely different systems that they only overlap by treating the clients that are in them. Outside of that, the payment systems do not overlap. And we also cannot share staff. So the staff have to be separated as well. And so we offer, like I said, a multitude of programs. We have our substance use residential program, our recovery home, our crisis residential center. We have supervised residential, our Springfield house, where we house individuals with serious mental illness, teaching them independent skills so that they can live independently. We have our supported residential, where we have mental health housing options for individuals, and that's permanent housing for them, where they can live and receive case management services for us for the rest of their lives. We have one of the largest prevention programs in the state of Illinois, that is embedded in a multitude of school systems, really teaching our youth preventative care. We also have our entire Danville location, which is all substance use services. And then we have our Kankakee location, which is both mental health, substance use, and crisis services. So the CCBHC, although it is incredibly important to Rosecrans of Central Illinois, it is just a fraction of what we do in this community and the services that we offer. And I know everybody's thinking, but Melissa, you haven't mentioned the behavioral health urgent care, and I haven't yet, because the news is not the best news. The state of Illinois originally stated that the behavioral health urgent care was going to be mandatory for all organizations that received the CCBHC designation. They have since gone back on that and have removed it from the CCBHC. Rosecrans was already knee deep in construction of our behavioral health urgent care, which is located on the backside of our Moreland location. And we knew that we had really leaned on a lot of community involvement for that program, and we were not going to stop that build out or that service and promise that we made to the community. So we have gone ahead and went through and have gone ahead with finishing construction, and we will be opening up that program at the 1st of June, because we made a promise to this community that we would bring a behavioral health urgent care. And so we are not going to go back on that, because the state is thinking some things over. And so that is not considered a CCBHC. It will run like a traditional fee-for-service program. That program is amazing. It is a walk-in program where individuals can walk in, be dropped off by loved ones, be brought in by ambulance, fire, police. And really, they will immediately be triaged to see where their needs are. Do they need to go to residential? Do they need to be hospitalized? Do they need to go to crisis stabilization? And we're able to do that in person and take care of them in their immediate moment of need. And so this is going to be a phenomenal program that has medical out of it, that has clinical services out of it, and the most important, will have a plethora of peer support staff in it, because we have found that having those peer support components in our programs have the greatest success for the clients that we are serving. And then, of course, the state has also decided that they may change the crisis system of care. That is going to potentially have a huge impact for Rosecrans, because we are embedded throughout the state of Illinois providing mobile crisis response services. We have very limited information on that, but it is something new that will potentially be coming down the pike, and just something that we constantly have to make sure that we are prepared for. So that is the end of our presentation. And we just want to thank you for allowing us to come and discuss what's been going on at our Walnut location.
Thank you very much. To all three of you, opening it up now for board members and staff members, and then we'll open up after that to anybody on the Zoom, so we can start with board and staff. Any questions or comments?
I do. Hi, Melissa.
Hi.
One of the beautiful, the bright spots of my job is, and it may not be as bright to the agencies, but when I come out to do a site visit, and I get a chance to talk with you about what's going on in your, you know, with your programs. You have, you, Dave and Liz, just gave us a wealth of information about what's going on, right? And I was going to give you a scenario, because I think sometimes, you know, you can really find out what's going on with an agency when you, you know, put them to the test and you just ask, you know, some basic questions. But you kind of answered a lot of the scenario component that I had for you. But I'll just ask it anyway. One, first of all, I appreciate, I love the the one shared treatment plan for clients. I love it. I think it's a great idea to be able to pull different teams together to review just one plan with that said client. It just makes things, it streamlines everything. I also appreciate the 24-hour crisis access point. I think that's very critical. The peer-led recovery. Who knows better than a peer, right? And then the family voice in the psych services. Love that. So the scenario that I was going, that I'll just briefly mention is there's a 40-year-old man. He lives in Sadorus, right? So kind of rural, I guess, if you kind of rural. He's an alcoholic. He has major depression. He's not, you know, he lost his family. He has no income, no insurance. He's a diabetic, and he can't find his purpose anymore. So he's got all these things going on, a myriad of things going on. Who's coming out there to see him? What's the next steps to going to Sadorus to help this gentleman?
I can pop it if you want, Pappas. So I think the one cool thing about the CCBHC is there's no such thing as a wrong door. So the 40-year-old man struggling with alcohol use disorder and major depressive disorder, and it really could be any of our teams who get first contact, depending on where the referral comes from. Those are people we treat every day. If it's major depressive is the major issue that day, it could be mobile crisis response going to their home to see them and see what we can do to help provide them better care or give them more access to care. Sometimes it's community-led referrals that then launch into our community support teams and peer support that can go out or make contact with them to see what their needs are. So there really is no wrong door of what the next step is.
I knew you would answer that question. You kind of already provided the answers. It feels like this model, the CCBHC model, has an internal wraparound service component. It's everything, and I hate to say one-stop shop, but if we can get you through the door, we're going to get you in the right, get you to the right person, the right direction, the right treatment, the right help. And so that's beautiful to see, to hear it outlined tonight. So thank you all for providing this information, and I'll stop.
Thank you, Leon. Other questions or comments?
Hi. I'm John Joachim. I just had a couple questions for psychiatry. You said you had multiple now. Are they in-house or are they telehealth?
We have one provider that is 50% in-house, 50% telehealth, and then the rest are telehealth.
Okay. And then for teens, do you do substance use disorder services for them as well, or is it just mental health service? Okay, perfect.
Yes.
And I know in the past couple of years when we had Dr. Lisa Liggins Chambers, she did bring up just a concern about making sure we have diverse providers. Can you, tell us about the diversity of not staff, but more the counselors and the physicians that provide mental health and substance use disorder services?
Yes. So when that feedback came back, I think that Rosecrans did a great job at showing the diversity of the staff that we have here. That has not stopped with the expansion of our services. Right now, we are really focused on trying to hire individuals that are bilingual. We have a phenomenal program that we use, but we would really like that to be an in-person experience for clients. for us. And so we are always trying to figure out how do we meet the community's needs? How do community members come in and see people that look like them and are from the area that they are from? And so we have been incredibly blessed to hire a lot of individuals recently that have roots in Central Illinois, that were born and raised here, that didn't just come here to go to the university and then leave. And I think that that has really helped with connecting with our community members.
So currently, do you have any counselors or physicians that say like speak Spanish, or any African-American counselors or physicians?
Yes. The majority of our programs are employed by persons of color. We do have a few bilingual staff. They are mostly concentrated. I'm very lucky in crisis services. The majority of my crisis services team for MCR are Spanish speakers, people of color. We have a French speaker and quite a few Arabic speakers as well on that team. But across the board at our Walnut location, most of our programs are very diverse as far as the staff who are working them and the treatment that they provide.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
All right, I will go next. I have, I guess, several questions. We'll see what order they come out in because I forgot a pen and I don't have my computer. So I'll try. So I was also, like Leon, very interested in this kind of like treatment plan that is, you know, like one treatment plan that is person-centered and family-centered and also accessed by everyone on the team. And I was interested in how that is developed. Like, is there a point person that kind of starts the process or takes the lead on kind of writing everything up? Or how does that typically work?
That's a really good question, Molly. And that collaborative model is new to us. I'm going to let Dave talk a lot about it because he oversees our whole clinical team. And they really had to develop a new process because prior to this, everything was separate. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Excuse me. And we actually had to overhaul our EHR, which was needed for other reasons, but it's a big lift. And so traditionally we had a mental health treatment plan and a substance use treatment plan. They were separate and they didn't really work together other than you could see the other person's plan. So we had NetSmart, which is the creator of Avatar, come in, sort of revamp everything, create an integrated plan that, let's say the first person that makes contact and gets them in a treatment program generates theirs. They make note of some of the other needs they have. Let's say they start in mental health, but they need substance use. Once that person's in the substance use program and getting their sort of intake done and their treatment portion of it, then that clinician can literally just update it. It pulls everything through from the original person that they're still in with, and then they can add all of their pieces to it. Finalize it, goes through the signing process for the clinician and the LPHA. And then that treatment plan, again, it gets updated every 6 months, but you can continue to update that as they go in a new program. So it's like psychiatry gets added, that can just be updated and put in there. And then everybody's objectives and interventions and responsibilities are all listed in one document. So really exciting, took a long time to get there. I didn't think that the technology piece would be that much of a lift, but EHRs are complicated apparently.
We also were incredibly intentional with developing behavioral health CATMANs, which is like a stand-up for our outpatient programs where clinicians and leaders are able to join. They do join a weekly meeting where they are staffing cases, where they're collaborating about how to get clients either stabilized or is there another program that would be a better fit for this client? And when we were siloed before, there was maybe an email that would go out, or you would occasionally, you know, knock on that clinician's door and be like, hey, I think we share this client. And now it's this weekly collaboration of, you know, the teams who are providing treatment to these community members. And we've seen not only an increase in our successful discharges for our clients, but we've also seen an increase in the retention of our clients staying in their programs, because it's not just one individual helping this person. It is an entire team of people.
Yeah, that all is very cool. And as a therapist myself, I was imagining like the overhauling process of the, like, you know, just knowing how in my EHR the treatment plan is like built in. I was just like, how do you even do that? But it sounds like, you know, maybe whoever the client first sees kind of kicks it off, but then each clinician is able and to come in and add to it. And I guess how it sounds like the client and their family are involved with that too, but like, does the client sign the treatment plan? Like, what is their involvement?
Yes, yeah. The client has to sign the treatment plan for it to be valid, right? We need them to be invested in their treatment just like we are. And so they are able to review their treatment plan, and sometimes they'll disagree with it. And so we go back and we will update it so that we get them to a point where they believe in kind of the services that they are going to be provided and what the expectation of the clinician is as well. Because on that treatment plan, it outlines what we are going to do to assist them. And so it holds us accountable in the client's eyes. And we also could have families sign the treatment plan, especially if they're taking a central role in the client's treatment. We really want that family involvement, because we see success rates skyrocket when the client has a support system outside of Rosecrans or Promise or Courage Connections. You know, we really want that family unit and that support system while they're in treatment.
Thank you very much for sharing all those details. I mean, it does seem like an ideal way to do treatment planning, especially with, I mean, I have my clients sign the treatment plans, and some of them are like, I've never even looked at a treatment plan from a therapist before. So it's really good how involved they are, and that they can invite other people like from their family to be involved too. I was also curious about the technological piece about like lifting the evidence-based outcomes and information out of the, I was just curious if you could share a little bit more about how that was constructed and how that works.
Yeah, I can speak a little bit about that. So we finally convinced our IT department to let us leverage AI, but it's not the AI that you would think of in terms of artificial intelligence, you know, scouring the depths of the internet. It's actually augmented reality, which is more controlled. And so this company that created Elios, E-L-E-O-S, it initially was a note-taking assistant so that it would help our clinicians find, you know, be a little bit more clinical in their documentation, make it easier for them in terms of making their work reflect in the note much better. And so that it just started out as like a note-taking assistant. And then they said they also have a product that was for supervisors, that was this sort of compliance dashboard. And so as well as like kind of scouring for the EBT uses within the notes, it also, it has other components that it's tracking. Well, like the use of the program itself, you know, I believe even progress in terms of how the client's doing based on the progress note. So it's super fascinating. We've got the note-taking piece. We're still, the compliance dashboard is, I think, still sort of in the works, but we've been able to look at it and see some of the basic stuff, like how many staff are using it. We're really trying to get buy-in. You know, the idea of AI is scary, even though it's not actual AI. It's, you know, augmented, controlled, not scouring the depths of the internet. So we've had a lot of very resistant clinicians that finally tried it and said, oh my God, I love it. You know, so we're seeing a good buy-in. It's a slow adoption, but it's getting there. And I think the possibilities that it provides, not only for the clinician, but for us as supervisors to help us ensure things are going the way that we're expecting them to, that's really great. I'm excited to see where it goes.
What's cool, Molly, is it sits on top of our avatar, which is our EHR system. And so it's just a little icon that once a client consents to it, we're able to activate it. And then that's kind of how it moves throughout the system. We really were incredibly intentional on why we wanted Elios, and we really wanted to figure out how do we give back to our clinicians. Oftentimes when we do staff surveys, paperwork is exhausting and burnout is incredibly high because of all of the things that you don't get into this work for, right? We don't get into this work to write a note. And we don't get into this work to, you know, spend all this time on our documentation. And so what Elios, which is the tool that we use, offers is that pressure is taken off of the clinicians, and it's able to help them through their own words construct documentation that they then have to go in and edit. And it does not create the note for them. It just creates the template that they could use then in Avatar and for their note. And we have seen in our most recent staff survey, nobody had reported like documentation burnout, which is like the first time ever that we didn't hear, you know, there's just too much. I don't have time to be with my clients. And so it's doing something right. And we really wanted to figure out how can we give back to the clinicians. And this has been a phenomenal tool that we're able to do so.
Thank you so much for sharing about that. I will acknowledge I have a clinician who's been a little resistant to AI myself.
Yes.
But I, in talking to other clinicians who have used it, I know how it can reduce the paperwork burnout, and even in ways like reflect back to clinicians, like the good work they're doing, like being able to be like, oh, like I did not realize that you could describe what happened in the session in this way. It can be kind of revelatory for people, it seems like. So, and it does seem like a very, you know, especially with this model requiring this evidence-based certain kinds of reporting, it sounds like, and tracking that the EHR didn't have built in, it seems like something that's very helpful to have on top of it. I did have one other question. Sorry for taking up so much time, but I guess this is more regarding the financial piece. So just to make sure I'm understanding correctly, if someone comes into a CCBHC service who has private insurance, it cannot be billed?
No.
There's definitely some thoughts I have about that in terms of, like, is that putting the burden on the state to do things that insurance, you know, should be paying for. But we could probably have a long conversation about that. I am also wondering about the issue that you have experienced with the state, like, pulling back on certain items that they were going to require, what that process was like, and if there's anything else you are anticipating or like fearing of being pulled back, not only as this gets rolled out, but also given all of the threats federally that are happening with cutting of services.
Yes, I think we would be foolish to sit here and say that we were not concerned about the future. I have hope, though, which I know is not like a tangible thing, but I do have hope that CCBHCs in other states have been incredibly successful and they are still receiving funding. And Illinois being chosen as another demonstration state, I think that we're still moving in the right direction. And we just added 4 additional CCBHCs to the state. Not Rosecrans, but HFS. And so my hopes are that they see the benefit of CCBHCs is ultimately supposed to cut the cost down for individuals that are utilizing the most expensive resources in the community, which are hospitals, right? Our police departments. And so what we're hoping for is to, for us to be able to provide the data that we are seeing a decrease in overutilization of these other services. Clients are being surrounded by support and care, and they are becoming stabilized. And that is the goal of CCBHC. And there is always concerns that the demonstration will be over and that the state of Illinois will not move forward with this being a CCBHC state. However, Rosecrans is always prepared for that. And so that is why we are so blessed that we have such a diversified kind of menu here, where we are still in the residential field, and we are still in mental health housing, because we know how important all of those services are. And then I also think that when you do this work, you know kind of how the state operates, and they sit at tables that unfortunately we don't. And so sometimes we have to learn to roll with the challenges. The behavioral health urgent care was a surprise, but it none of that will inhibit us from moving forward with the promises that we've made to the community and the services that we want to provide. Rosecrans is a strong organization, and we have incredibly strong relationships in this community with other resources. And so I really think that we try to keep that in mind. But like you said, Molly, it's always a worry.
Yeah, I mean, hearing you describe the behavioral health urgent care, I'm honestly in shock that would be pulled. It seems so vital. I'm glad that you're taking steps to make sure the service happens, even without the state's support. But yeah, it's definitely a tough landscape to be launching something like this, but also a really important one to be launching something like this. So that is all of my questions. Thank you very much for your presentation. And I do want to open it up to anybody else who wants to ask questions or make comments, including anybody in person or online who also wants to.
This is Susan Fowler. I have a couple of comments, if I might. I served on the mental health board for, I don't know, a long time, 6 to 8 years. And now I'm on the developmental disability board. I've also had firsthand experience with Rosecrans, but it's been probably 6 to 10 years since I've been engaged in services. I happen to also be a parent, and as my son was completing high school, there was a desperate need, I thought, for a dual diagnosis program to serve people with learning disabilities, developmental disabilities, and mental health issues. And when I was seeking services 15, 20 years ago, they were so separate. You could not combine them. I will say that Rosecrans, with Mental Health Board funding, had a wonderful dual diagnosis program that got a lot of young people, like my son, into services during the however many years that program existed. I don't think it exists anymore. I will also say that the case management program in Rosecrans made it possible for us to get on the PUNS list and to get Social Security and Medicaid. Fabulous. I don't know that we would have ever figured it out on our own. My concern with Rosecrans a few years ago was that there was such a barrier between substance use and mental health. And I can't tell you how excited I am. I was once told when I went in to Rosecrans that one clinician could not speak to another because one clinician was on the substance use side and the other was on the mental health side. And services completely fell apart for several individuals that I knew. And they ended up in urgent hospital situations because of the failure for that integration of services. So I can't tell you how excited I am about the change. I don't know when it happened, but I can only compliment you on it. So my comments are, I know Rosecrans has been incredibly important in this community. It's been funded for a long time through the Mental Health Board. It was at one point funded jointly with the DD Board for the dual diagnosis program. I know that I'm on the DD Board and we're funding a dual diagnosis component through the RPC. I would like to encourage Rosecrans, I think, to think about what a difference their dual diagnosis program for mental health DD did back in the teens. It was fabulous. And it wasn't just to get people on puns. It was really extremely helpful for dealing with the frustration that people with significant learning disabilities or intellectual disabilities have when they're so close to being able to participate in the community, but they're stigmatized and they're different. And the mental health part made a huge, huge difference. Now, I know your plate is full, so I'm encouraging that, but I can't help but do that because it was so important. The other thing that I would like to really emphasize is the importance of having that other dual diagnosis of substance use and mental health now integrated, because we walked away as users from Rosecrans, my family, because it wasn't. And I don't know that the world knows that, the community knows it. I don't know how coordinated referrals are from, for instance, Carl Emergency Room to Rosecrans. Maybe they are, maybe they aren't. I think there's still a huge gap in our community in information for families who are addressing multiple issues of mental health, DD, and substance abuse. So thank you for what you've shared. I have hope again in Rosecrans, hearing that you're doing that. But that's all I can say. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to make a comment? Go ahead.
Hi. So I'm actually glad that I stuck around and I wanted to hear you out. Awesome presentation. But I just had a few questions. I kind of like combine all three. The first question that I had, so I know you mentioned that you all provide youth psychiatric services. Are your psych services on referral, or can a family just kind of come in, or would they need to be referred by like a social worker or?
No, there's no wrong door. It could come in through a referral. It could come in a walk-in. Somebody could call and get a phone assessment right away. I mean, we really wanted to break down the barriers of getting individuals into treatment. So those are all ways that an individual can get into any component of our care, including our psychiatric services.
Thank you. And then I guess kind of part two to that would be, do you offer general counseling or therapy services like aside from like the psychiatric?
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes, we offer youth case management services. We offer youth outpatient services, and we have multiple youth therapists. So, yes, we offer all of those services outside of our Walnut building.
Awesome. And then the last question I had was, would you all be interested in reconnecting? Is that something that... and I know that's kind of like an on-the-spot question. You may not even be the people to ask that to, but I'm just curious. I know it's been some years, but Rosecrans and UNCC did have a partnership where Rosecrans were coming in, professionals were coming in and doing workshops on like substance use for our teen reach group. And then also we're doing like some youth dating violence prevention stuff and some other workshops. I think our person that that we had had just moved to a different place, and then we like lost that connection, or we never really got a chance to pick up with a new person. But we'd love to have that, and again, even like built into our summer. And even if it's, you know, if that's too soon to do summer, maybe we could look at next school year. But I would love to have that again, like those workshops, and even maybe some career talks. I'd love to have some, you know, some of your clinicians come over and speak to our college and career readiness program students about like your path that you took to becoming therapists, or, you know, like different challenges and how you've overcome them and that sort of thing. So we have panels like that. We love to have some people from Rosecrans maybe come over and do some of that too, aside from the workshops.
Well, you are one lucky duck today because you are talking to the right people. We awesome. Are the people that you talk to. And so absolutely, absolutely, we would love love to continue that. I'm going to put my email in the chat, and you could just email me directly, and I will get you connected to the individuals that will help support all of the things that you just talked about.
Awesome. Thank you.
I love this. Lynn, do you want to go?
A little more?
Yeah.
I know that folks are probably tired. I'm sorry. We do have some snacks here, and hopefully you'll have snacks wherever you are, too. Okay, so I've been following the drama of the CCBHC for a long time, since the beginning. I'm going to spare you the kind of attitudes that I've heard around it for all these years. But I'm familiar with it from the perspective of advocates and the political side of it, how it came to be. I can't even believe that it hasn't been abandoned yet, right? Like, this is an idea that's not really new, that people understand will work, and so we only large scale do it for a couple of years, and then we abandon it again and call it something new 10 years later. So I'm really happy that it's lasted this long, and that even in this very difficult last year and a half, the funding hasn't been pulled. So, wow. But I have a few questions, like just within inside of that, and then I have questions that are just like Rosecrans, not CCBHC. In the same spirit of like where I can't believe that the thing is still happening, like it has taken a long time to accomplish the changes in the law, which allow you to communicate across systems, right, forever. And it also, this might be a really outdated concern, but should I continue to jump on if I see any kind of paperwork reduction legislation, such as let's not use IM cans anymore? Like, I remember people leaving the field because of IM cans. Okay, so if I see that, to really get behind that kind of legislation. Okay, thank you for the honest answer. We're not going to talk, and also in the same spirit of like sometimes I can't believe good things keep happening, I'm not going to talk about what we can expect during this year with Medicaid, because that's hasn't happened yet. I want to share that I did meet your prevention person yesterday, because I can't say no to any committee. And she's amazing. So, like, I think that Dr. J will be pleased with that partnership. That is a real dynamo. And then my final just Rosecrans-related question is this. I was on a call today, and they're very careful not to say anything on these calls that they're not ready to go public. It was with the Department of Behavioral Health and Recovery. And they were talking about some opioid funds that are not spent yet. And their plan is to increase where they've already invested some of that opioid funding. And so I wonder if you are one of those places, because they're getting ready to increase those funds. Do you guys know about that?
We, Champaign County is not one of those places, Lynn.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you for letting me know. I got a little bit of hope, but that was only at like 3 o'clock. So it's not like I spent the whole day.
For Rosecrans, there may be other organizations that are receiving that. So I don't in Champaign County. So I don't want to just automatically say like it's, but for Rosecrans, are in Champaign County, we have not received funds from the opioid settlement funds.
Okay. Because it was quite a bit of money that they haven't moved yet, and that they were talking about how to move it fast, move it through current grant recipients. So I'm sorry to hear we're not one of them. Okay, I think that's it. But, yeah, thank you. Just, it's amazing that there is still a SAMHSA, too, and it's amazing that we do continue to add states to this project despite everything else. So I'm going to hang on to that. All right.
Is there anyone else who would like to ask any questions or make any comments, either in person or online?
I just want to thank Jessie Heckenmuller for all of her nice comments in the chat. Hi, Jessie. Her and I go way back. We did our master's together at U of I, so it was nice seeing you in the chat tonight.
Absolutely. We truly appreciate the partnership and the collaboration over the last year. So, and I know it goes way back, but I think there's been an intensity to it over the last year that's been really appreciated.
I'm just very excited to see all of the collaboration between programs and like conversations tonight. So with that, we can go ahead. Thank you both to Urbana Neighborhood Connection Center and Rosecrans for your great presentations this evening. And we will next move on to public participation agency input, which we've kind of already been having go on the whole time, but that's okay. So if there is anybody who would like to make formal public input right now, you can come forward to the podium, fill out a comment card, you can raise your hand on Zoom or put something in the chat. As always, the Mental Health Board is always welcome to hear from the public. We can't respond directly to public comment, but we may use it to inform future decisions. So is there anybody who would like to make any comment now? No one in person or online. So with that, we can move on to board announcements and input. Are there any board announcements or input? Other than, I guess we'll sort of merge this announcement into the final piece, which is to adjourn. We will have a meeting and a study session in April, where we will have business at the April 22nd meeting, but we'll begin our kind of public review of the applications we've received for PY27. So those would be April 22nd and April 29th. And with that, we can adjourn for the evening. So next meeting will be April 22nd at 5:45 in the Shields Carter Room of the Bennett Center in Urbana. Have a good night, everyone.
Recording stopped.
Prevention person at Rosecrans?
Prevention person. Like really, like they were saying they really just work with the state because there's so much, so many programs in the prevention program. So, but really, the context was one of these, the you know, CSPH strategic planning work groups. It was the LGBTQIA work group. So, you know, special. People under 18. Like, that's horrible. So, anyway.
Yeah. I definitely, before, like, I know we really enjoyed having them come through and do, you know, work with our youth over the summer. So, you know, excited to hear them being like, oh, yeah, let's reconnect. Because I think that, if I remember correctly, that's what happened 7 years ago. I think the person he
she looks like. That got her.
I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
Email with Melissa so they never.
Thank you. Thank you. I was trying to look.